Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Bobby Bell, right here on LA Talk Radio.
It is another Thursday evening. This is Los Angeles Talk Radio. This is a writer's block you are listening to. My name is Jim Christina. I'm the host of your show. Sitting in the studio, finally, with my lovely, charming co-host, Bobby Jean Bell.
Great to be back.
It is good to have you back. That was a long dry spell.
I had 2 weeks.
I know.
I missed it.
God.
But you had great shows.
We did. We had a good
great
time.
Great shows.
Sheena Metal came in and just kicked it.
That was a really fun evening.
Yeah.
I'm still reading Hirsch's book.
Yeah, really?
I cannot put it down.
Well, it's a good book.
It's a great book.
Yeah. And, of course, her husband, Jim, is sitting over there holding up his wall again because the other chairs are
Wave at the crowd,
taken.
Jim. Wave at the crowd.
We are, I have actually one thing that I have to get out of the way tonight. First, because the bookie made me promise I would do this, and I know this lady is listening. She lives in Porter Ranch. And Pam, if you are listening tonight, Pam Newman, shout out from the writer's block. if you are listening, if you're not, well, we always think you should have. There you go. We have some wonderful guests in the show tonight, and I have to say that I'm like stoked, and I don't really get excited that often. If you want to talk to a guest tonight, is the number to hear is 818-602-4929. Again, that number is 818-602-4929. We're not going to do a whole lot of banter before we get started. Henry's going to be calling in next week. And Bobby, take it away.
We mention Target Freight Management every show. And we mention that they have a full truckload service that's the best in the industry. But have we mentioned that TFM Truckload gets your freight there every time on time? No muss, no fuss, at the rates you need for your transportation bottom line. Call today at 1-844-653-7789 and tell them you heard it on The Writer's Block, and they'll have a little something extra for you. And you know, while we're at it, if you are an LTL shipper, you are probably looking for the best rates at the lowest hassle possible. Call Target Freight Management. Their customized transportation management system is just the ticket to getting your freight moved your way. Call Target Freight Management today at, get out your pencil, get out your iPhone, 1-888-653-1323. Or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web. Call today. You won't be sorry you did.
Cool.
I thank them.
I have to say that I believe you got a copy as well. Eric Heisner's new book, T.H. Elkman. I just finished it. It's a great story.
I'm excited. Yes, it arrived. I'm still reading, you know, Robert Hirsch.
it actually is in the vein of one of mine. I'm just saying.
Does it have salty language?
No.
No?
But Eric, you know, he's not like that. He doesn't. We have tonight in our studio, we have two just tremendous gentlemen. One was the very first guest we had on the writer's blog. He can hold an hour by himself.
Absolutely.
Bobby and I could go get a cup of coffee, come back, and Court would still be talking. he graduated from USC as an English major, and also from the College of Hard Knocks, and from the College of I'm Really Famous U. Mr. Court Joyner joins us tonight in the studio.
My pleasure.
Welcome back, Courtney.
As well it should be, Courtney. And sitting in the chair next to Court, oh my God, I'm so thrilled. He's over there going, I don't know why. There is a gentleman that is born in Brooklyn, went to... began his photography education at 13. That's pretty young, isn't it?
Yes.
Attended the University of Buffalo. And did I read that you also went to Cornell?
Yeah, for a semester.
Okay. You went to Cornell. That's all that really
exactly,
counts.
Yeah.
He's a wonderful director. He's directed movies such as The Wolves, Dead Center, River of Death, Bulletproof, Lone Wolf McQuade, for those of you that are Chuck Norris fans, Eye for an Eye, Telltale Heart, and many more. He's now working on a book, Unsung Heroes and Villains of the Silver Screen. And he's got these old actors that are just dressed up in the Old West, and it's all on CPN. It's really cool stuff.
Very,
when this book
cool.
is available, you guys got to get it, because it's going to be a table, a coffee table book. Am I right, Steve?
Yes.
Okay. He's got actors such as L.Q. Jones, Gregory Harrison, Michael Parks, David Carradine, R.G. Armstrong. That's just to name a few. So if you would, please, welcome to the Writer's Block for the first time, Steve Carver.
Thank you.
Yay.
And I'll bet you anything nobody ever gave you the clap before. Huh? It's fascinating. Your bio is just, I mean, it's like really long. So I didn't want to get into the whole thing because we didn't have that much time. But I really wanted to get into kind of like your background a little bit and how you got into. I know how you got into photography, but how did you get into directing? And we'll get to you in a minute, Court.
We thank Courtney for introducing Steve Carver to us.
I have to tell you, Steve, I mean, I've seen a lot of these movies. They all were, I mean, watchable. Some of them were downright really good.
Thank you.
Yeah, and Telltale Heart I actually watched when I was a kid. I was like 20, 21 years old, so I'm kind of like you. I'm an old fart. But how did you get into directing? What was the deal there?
Well, directing was a direct line for me from art. My art was illustration, and my illustration basically told stories.
Uh-huh.
So photography was the next step in telling stories. Because photojournalism, which I studied at the University of Missouri,
mm-hmm.
Which I didn't have on my credits, by the way, because it was summer workshops. I studied under some great photojournalists at the university, and I started working for newspapers and doing stories that told stories, you know, doing newspaper and television stories that, you know, showed pictures, photographs. And what happened was that I made a film for my thesis at the university, Washington University, mm-hmm. and the next step was to get into doing films, mm-hmm. and I applied to the American Film Institute in Beverly Hills, and I became a director. I mean, it's hard to sort of like spell it out.
Yeah.
I can fill it in.
Yeah, hey, let
I'm sure you can. Well,
you
okay.
Courtney,
fill it in.
Courtney,
well,
you know
Steve went to the AFI. That's back when, well...
That would be the American Film Institute, right?
Right.
Okay.
Yes, but that was at the time when George Stevens Jr. was really looking at it as a great training ground for all these young guys to be introduced, and the studios were cooperating, and AFI interns were working on movies like Bullet and things like that, and they were being drafted into these big movies. And also it was a fantastic area for producers like Roger Corman to mm-hmm. look for mm-hmm. hot young talent. And Steve was one of the young talents after winning some awards at the AFI that was drafted by Roger to start directing for him.
Right. I made this film, mm-hmm. The Telltale Heart, mm-hmm. which was an Edgar Allan Poe picture.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And Roger had done a lot of Edgar Allan Poe movies for AIB at the time. And he loved the picture and gave me a job. And
wow.
I started doing editing for him. And
in fact, you cut some trailers.
Yes.
As I remember, you cut the trailer to Lady Frankenstein.
Yes.
Yes.
I cut many, many, many trailers.
You know, why don't we just go take a break and we'll let these two talk?
Sorry. Courtney has this just amazing.
I know it. It's just like between the two of them, they're just like.
It's just so fun.
It's like opening up a history book and just there they are.
There they are.
But directing became something that took the place of shooting pictures.
Uh huh.
And although picture taking, you know, photography was fun to do, directing had another phase, another aspect to me. It allowed me to work with a lot of people.
Uh-huh.
It allowed me to create something that was bigger than just photos. Obviously, it was a bunch of photos.
Sure.
And it gave me another way in which to tell stories.
Uh-huh.
But what happened was that after making so many films, I got a little bit, tired of traveling and making film that had to do with working with a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of producers that mm-hmm. were over my shoulder all the time. Mm-hmm. And I went back into doing photography.
Yeah.
And I opened up a photography lab. And in the lab, I suddenly discovered, by working with collectors and curators, that pictures that were done back in the late 1800s and early 1900s were beautiful. Were incredible.
They really were.
Yeah, the negatives that I worked with were original negatives by very famous photographers, Edward Sheriff Curtis in particular, mm-hmm. that really turned me on. And I want to know how they were made and technically how they were done mm-hmm. and what chemicals were mm-hmm. being used and so on. And I just fell in love with photography again, but in a different way and a much more sophisticated and complicated way,
mm-hmm.
because these photographs that I'm taking for this book are being done exactly the way in which they were done 150, 170 years
right,
ago.
Right, right. Now, Bobby has seen some, and I'm sure Court has seen a lot of them. The ones that I've seen that came out in the brochure and then the press release that we got on them, wow.
They're remarkable. And
you can't even tell
right.
who those people are. You know, they say, well, this is R.G. Armstrong.
Johnny Crawford.
The reason for that is very complex, because it's not an actor putting on wardrobe and sitting and saying, okay, this is a character
right.
that I'm playing.
Right.
It's a camera that looks deeply into a soul and capturing something that the eye doesn't see.
Right.
Now, you know, to explain it, it would take a long time.
Sure.
And it would take a lot of technicality to really delve deeply into what's happening. But I'll try to explain it very simply to understand. What's happening is that the person that sits in front of these lights, and these lights are all analog lights, mm-hmm. they're not modern lights, they're sitting for a period of time. These are time exposures. And the camera, similar to like cooking with a crock pot, is taking and savoring all these little photons that are being projected mm-hmm. onto the film. Mm-hmm. And what's being captured is something beyond what's being there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a science that I've discovered, and many photographers have discovered, especially with time exposures, that it's not what you see, but it's what was there moments before. And the actor projects a certain energy, and that energy builds up onto the film,
mm-hmm.
and onto the negative. And when I print these negatives, I actually see, just like a motion picture, several different images of that actor that's on that film. And in the development of it, I see him change. The expression changes, the mm-hmm. eyes change. Everything changes as the film is processed, as the print is being printed.
Mm-hmm.
It actually, comes alive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes these images so special. They're totally different than the digital picture that's captured in a very quick way
in an instant.
And it's quantum physics. It's a lot of things that are involved that make this time exposure, this very special image, come alive. And I don't take one image. I take many, many, many images, because one image from all these images comes out. And when the actor sits, it takes a while for him to project this energy.
Mm-hmm.
And for the camera to capture it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened in the olden days.
Right.
You know, they sat.
They sat.
I mean, the best images in the olden days, believe it or not, were the images when they had these dead guys in coffins that didn't move.
Right.
Yeah, or on the battlefield.
And they couldn't smile.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On the battlefields and such.
Yeah.
You, of course, have chosen just historic, you know, it's capturing for history some of the best known actors and character actors that we know of and is still alive and working today. You are choosing to put them in a Western setting, even though many of them have been in Westerns, but they've been in other films as well. What is it about your choice of, you know, choosing a Western setting over some other setting to put them in?
Well, that happened almost by accident and on purpose. I started by choosing homeless people when I was testing. I worked about 4.5 years before I recognized that this process was very special. And in sitting these people down, and the homeless people in particular, with nothing to mm-hmm. give but themselves, mm-hmm. they were very special portraits. And I saw that if I continue with this process, that I had to have some meaning to the portrait. So I called some of my friends that I worked with, R.G. Armstrong, L.Q. Jones, and for some reason they suggested, hey, let's build a set. Let's build a Western set. Let's celebrate the Western. And it was their idea to do this book.
Oh.
And it was R.G.'s portrait that was the first, and L.Q. was the second, and so on. And a lot of these actors passed away since.
Right.
They were the ones who started me off on this. And this was in 1996 that I started.
Oh, my goodness. It's been that
long. Over 20 years.
It's 20 years, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it celebrates the Western. Mm-hmm. The Western is something that is purely American. All over the world,
right.
You know, people celebrate the Western.
Right.
The American Western. And by taking actors that have done Westerns, that are known for Westerns, that look good as a Western character.
Right.
It enhances the book. I mean, it is the book. It enhances their portrait. They come alive. When the actor comes in, it really makes me feel like, what is this guy going to project? The moment he puts on the wardrobe, it's similar to when, you know, I direct a picture and I have an actor come on set and he's familiar with the script and we talk about the characters and we talk about, you know, the scene they're about to do and so on. There's a certain energy that builds, and when we shoot it, we rehearse it, we shoot it, and so on. Something builds up and, you know, we get it on film or we get something similar, something close to what we imagined. That's one thing, but in this photography, they put on the Western clothes, they sit in the set, and the set comes alive with these lights. The camera sits there, doesn't become intrusive. There's not a lot of people sticking their noses like on a movie set.
Mm-hmm.
So the actor feels that they're alone, that they're important, that they are creating the atmosphere, that they're creating the portrait, and it just happens.
Mm-hmm.
It just happens. And over a period of time, because these are time exposures, something happens, and I can't explain it, but the camera just finds it, captures it, and it just comes out. As I process the film, as I look at the contact sheets, and I look for the one frame that says who the actor is, mm-hmm. and it just says, it jumps out and says, mm-hmm. this is me, or this is who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, it probably doesn't look like them, and it probably isn't them, but it is them.
Mm-hmm. I just found it amazing. I mean, some of their expressions and some of the way they, I mean, Carradine really, I mean, you know, David Carradine is David Carradine. He always looked like David Carradine. Even he looked like David Carradine in his picture. But there was something in that picture mm-hmm. that was so far beyond his persona that kind of floated out of that picture. And it was just, it was amazing. I kept going back to it and looking at it, you know, knowing that I've seen him in, I don't know, countless Westerns. But there was just something about, and Michael Parks, too, is another one that there was something that just came out of that picture and grabbed me. So maybe I have to keep going back and looking, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. The moment that they're done with the taking of the portrait, there is a glow around them. I mean, it's almost like a certain amount of energy has lit them a light, and this energy is just wearing off, and they actually glow in the dark, it seems.
Do you find, and I, this may be a stupid question, but I don't think there are stupid questions, just stupid people. Do you find that when the photo is finished, you're done taking your photos of the actor, and you step back from the camera, is there a letdown period for you? Is there a sense of sorrow that it's now finished with this actor and now you have to go do something else?
No, there's a strange feeling that I have where I sort of like feel curious. Mm-hmm. Did I capture it? Mm-hmm. Did the camera get it? Mm-hmm. And it's a whole process from that point on. Because this is not a simple process. It takes about 6 hours just to get to an mm-hmm. image. The processing is different. All the chemicals, everything that's used in the process, there's a thing called reciprocity where you have to stay within certain limits to create the image based on what the manufacturer, Kodak, mm-hmm. says will give you the image. And I'm working so far out of the box. For photographers, they would understand that if you stay within certain limits, you get an image based on the fact that the settings of the camera, the chemicals used, the temperatures. I mean, there's so many different factors that have to be maintained. But I'm sort of like violating so many things because I have to slow everything down. Everything has to be slowed down. The color temperatures, because I'm not shooting color, has to be slowed down mm-hmm. in order to create yellow, which is a gray tone producer. Yellow is something that black and white film likes and produces all the 10,000 grays that are capable in the film. So the lights have to be a certain... the analog lights have to be a certain color temperature. Obviously, the person sitting has to stay still for a while. They mm-hmm. can't blink. They can breathe shallow, but they can't blink and move, or they blur. And in some cases, like for instance, we had one actor who died 2 weeks after we shot him, but his portraits didn't come out at all, because he had cancer at the time we were shooting him. And his energy was so far down that nothing was registering. So I had to call him and ask him to come back. And he explained to me, I didn't know that he had cancer and that he was on chemicals. And I had explained to him what happened. And he told me this, and I asked him if somehow he can give me that energy. And it was almost asking him to do something that suddenly he understood what was needed, and, mm-hmm. and believe it or not, I got the image. Mm-hmm. And that was Denver Pyle.
That was who?
Denver
Pyle?
Yes. Oh. And 2 weeks later, after he sat for the second time, he passed away.
Wow. That's when he's sitting there with a shotgun on his lap, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and that shotgun had such energy itself. That shotgun was a very important shotgun that has a history. I mean, that really scary history.
Oh, really?
Yes. But again, going back to the process, slowing everything down in the chemistry, by slowing everything down, you literally ask the film, the negative, to produce more of what is on that negative than normal. Mm. In other words, it's a thicker negative. It has more information on it than normal. You can't get that on a digital negative or a digital file. I don't care how many how much information you have in a digital file, you can't get the depth that's in a negative, in a silver gelatin negative. The other thing is that when I print on a piece of paper that has so much silver on the paper and the silver gelatin, the silver halides are so thick and the chemistry is so powerful that literally the depth inside the print is so depthy, and the grays are so great that you have this depth, almost a three-dimensional quality mm-hmm. to it, and you get that look that you described earlier. And that's what makes this so special.
Yeah, it's an incredible, just an incredible photographs. I've never seen anything like them.
Well, there's a spirituality to them. Their soul is definitely very present, and now I'm understanding some of how that happens, how that is captured. Mm-hmm. Have there been any exhibits of the work anywhere?
Or
No,
I'm waiting until I finish.
Until you finish it. Yeah.
How many more do you have left to take?
Anywhere from 14 to 17 more for the quota that I was asked to do for the book.
Anybody we know? You don't want to say.
Well, I don't want to.
Well, I know Court's not one, so.
we're adding several actresses.
I mean, one we spoke about before the show.
Yes, and until I get them on film. I don't want to jinx it.
I can't blame you.
You know, you speak of spiritual, you know, qualities to this process and so on. Believe it or not, it's true. There is a lot of spirituality involved because I'm very superstitious, and I think that if you speak ill about this process, things happen. Whether it's psychological or physical or whatever, you have to have a positive attitude doing all of this stuff. It doesn't work.
I would think to receive an invite from you to come to the studio would be quite an honor and a remarkable
Put you in front of the
opportunity.
Camera.
Do you with the actor or the person you're taking the photograph of, do you talk ahead of time about wardrobe or what kind of setting they'll be in, or do they kind of come in cold, or do you, you know?
I see their mind with a little bit of information, but the great thing that happens is that I allow the actor to know a little bit about the set that I build, but all of the artifacts, which are authentic, nothing is, there are no, you know, surprises to the actor. You know, I certainly don't want to see the actor's mind with something that's disturbing. But when the actor comes, there are a lot of options the actor has. For instance, if a male actor comes and sees something that makes him want to be good or bad, in other words, the black hat or the white hat, the gun or the shotgun, the good guy or the lawman, rather the lawman or the outlaw, they're both good.
They're both bad, actually.
Well, they're both bad. But what happens is they adopt an attitude. Mm-hmm. See, the attitude is what forms from their touching the artifacts. The guns play a big part of it.
Sure.
You know, just touching a gun, handling a gun. And a lot of these guns, in the beginning, we made several mistakes. We had real guns and real loaded ammunition in the guns. Mm-hmm. And every time I heard a click, I would jump to the roof. Actors, unfortunately, are like children. In some cases, they play.
They play with the guns.
Yeah, and I hear cocking of the guns, and right away we all jump and grab the gun. But now we use dummy ammunition. But the point of is that a lot of the actors are able to rekindle their minds as to when they played a role, and some of them important roles to them, and when they rekindle the scene in their mind, and they reanimate what they did, and they go through the emotions of what they're doing, it adds to the photo, although it's not an animated photo.
Sure.
And that's what sets it up.
Sure.
So I let them use their imagination, and that's what brings the life to the photo as well.
I have to break here real quick, and we have to do another real short commercial, and we'll be back to you in just a second. I want to get some information out of your compadre over here as well. So hang tough, and we're going to be right back with you. Nestled in a little corner in Simi Valley on Tapo Canyon and Cochran Street is Sutter's Mill. It's one of the finest steakhouses in Ventura. At Sutter's, you'll find casual dining with a touch of elegance and a rustic steakhouse atmosphere. Their well-trained staff strives to provide their guests with a great dining experience. At Sutter's, you will find the finest in steaks and seafood, along with specialty items such as barbecue, pork ribs, deep-fried chicken, or shrimp. Sutter's offers a full bar with special happy hour pricing and never charges a corking fee. So bring your own wine, because they love to open it, and then they take a hit off of it before they give it to you. Visit their website at Sutter's for Dining. That's Sutter's4Dining.com to make online reservations and view their hours and menus. They also offer a summer special section, which gives you a 20% discount Monday through Thursday from 4 p.m. to a close. So enjoy. For reservations, call 805-520-4797 or go to www.suttersfordining.com. And if you want to call in and talk to our guest tonight, oh, please do. These guys are great. Well, we haven't, actually haven't. Court hasn't said hardly anything. 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. And we're in the studio tonight with Court Joyner and Steve Carver. And Steve has been explaining his photography process, which is fascinating, I have to say. And I would, oh man, I want one of these books, like, to die for. Yeah. Maybe Christmas is coming. One never knows. Court.
Yes, sir.
I hate to just keep you in the dark over here. And I know you've been sitting over here fascinated, but you've been chomping.
Yes. I have been.
You've known Steve for a number of years, I assume.
30 years.
Okay. Wow, really? And you guys have palled around together and probably opened a couple bottles of wine together?
L.Q. Jones actually introduced us.
Did he? Really?
Yes, he did.
And, of course, you're a screenwriter, and you're a producer, and you're an author, and novelist.
We worked together on a few things. Well, one major project that we did that unfortunately was not made was the big Cynthia Rothrock Split Lightning. It was going to star her... David Carradine and Christopher Lee. Mm. And that didn't happen, but yeah. Steve always thought of me and was always very very kind and brought me in on a couple of things, and we nursed different projects along. I've known each other a long time.
Well, and I assume that you've busted a couple bottles of wine together and probably vodka, gin,
yes.
A couple bottles of whiskey.
And Court has a couple very exciting things that are going on.
I write the text for this book, for Steve's book.
Okay,
there you go.
I did wonder about that. Okay.
There you go.
Yes,
see,
I
was going to ask what you had, if anything, to do with this book, and
yes.
Now we know. You write the text for it.
Great deal. Yeah.
And you also have a book that's coming out, a new one. It's not out yet, right?
One is out and one is coming out
this month.
Yes. No. The second Shotgun came out.
Oh, it's out. Okay.
It came out in June.
Okay.
In fact, it came out on my birthday, and I found out yesterday that I am the 8th best-selling author at Random House Pinnacle.
Wow!
Congratulations! Now you also have your Captain Nemo book.
Captain Nemo comes out next April.
And that we saw
from,
that the cover.
McMillan, yeah.
The cover of that thing. Holy crap!
Yeah,
and it's gorgeous.
The pre-sales and all that have done very well.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
So it's fun. I'll be kind of juggling the two book series, and I'm writing Shotgun 3 and 4 right now.
At the same time.
And they're so convoluted, Jim, as you it gets
so confusing because I don't know where my characters are at any given time. So I just have to go back and reread.
Do you work on book 3 in the morning and book 4 after lunch? And
I actually am at the point now, unfortunately, it's kind of one thing at a time, but we compartmentalize our days.
Sure.
But one of the great things about Steve's project, not only was because of he was very kind to ask me to be a part of it, but also to so many of the images were also mutual friends.
Mm-hmm.
And they were haunting. Particularly, I remember when he showed me the images of R.G. Armstrong. And, of course, Steve worked with R.G. many times. In fact, I met R.G. and his wife, Mary, through Steve. And I think when those pictures were taken, I think his eyesight was almost completely gone by then, wasn't it?
Glaucoma.
Yeah, he had. And they're just, they are haunting. And, of course, you spoke about the image of Denver Pyle.
Uh-huh.
And
uh-huh.
This is not just, again, just these incredible images of these performers, but it is also this amazing tribute and testament to these men. Mort Woodward saw his shots. He couldn't even believe it. He said they're the best pictures of him that has ever been taken his entire career. And he's correct. They're astonishing. But that's what's also so exciting is now that, I mean, this is really immortal stuff.
You know, I was amazed at, because there are so many of the actors that, and I went through the list of all the pictures that you actually have taken so far. And some of them, R.G. Armstrong was one that I remember so well from being so vibrant, even on screen. I remember seeing him for the very first time in a big movie. Ride the High Country.
Yes, indeed.
Where he was the Bible-thumping father. And he was so real in that movie. I mean, you could just see it in his face and in his actions. And then I saw that picture of him. The one picture, or a couple pictures you've got. And it's just like, wow. That just really, really, really digs into him.
Do you know how he actually ended up in Ride the High Country?
No, I have no clue.
I will tell you. R.G., this goes back to, for everybody, to the Seventh Voyage of Sinbad, if anybody remembers that movie. R.G.,
I remember it, but I don't remember who was in it.
The actor who played the evil magician in the Seventh Voyage of Sinbad.
He was?
He was. And he was playing Helen Keller's father in The Miracle Worker on Broadway. And he left the production to go do the movie, and R.G. Armstrong was his understudy. R.G. did Miracle Worker on Broadway, and he was seen and cast from that performance in the pilot of The Rifleman, which was directed by Sam Peckinpah. That's how they met.
I remember that pilot. Oh,
and then he was replaced. He was replaced by Paul Fix.
Right.
But that was how that happened. And then Ride the High Country, and then, of course, it kind of all blossomed from there.
Now, you're not directing anymore at all, are you, Steve?
Not until I finish this book.
Okay, so you're kind of like on hiatus?
Something like that.
Yeah. Like, to hell with it. I'm going to finish this book. I'm not getting into the crazy stuff until I'm done.
This is more fun.
I have no doubt.
Are there some actors that were on your kind of bucket list that unfortunately left us before you were able to capture them? Yeah.
That's a sad thing.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine.
Well, it's always a sad thing.
I would imagine so. It was one of the things that Cindy Mitchum was talking about, the project she's been working on, the poetry of her dad, getting recorded, and that there were some folks that had wanted to record that, you know, left us before they could get that done.
Sure.
And then there are some that recorded and then have left us, and how wonderful to have them, you know.
You're chasing that shadow. You really are. And when I was at True West and doing all the film journalism and stuff, the other day I got a call from somebody who wanted to use some quotes from Warren Oates from my book The Westerner, and I said sure, of course, I gave permission. It was very nice of them to ask. And I was looking at the book, and out of 15 interview subjects, only one is still alive. And that's of course, it's, you know, as sure as the turning of the earth, but you know, that is very much, I think, part of it too, is to record. I mean, it's beyond posterity. It's securing everybody's place and their accomplishment, and particularly with things like these astonishing images. And as Steve said, what we very much would like to do, and what we hope to do, is as the book nears completion, is to look at places like the Autry and places like that for an actual showing, for a gallery showing, because these images absolutely deserve it. We'll even invite everybody who's still alive.
Well, there you go. Now, are you going to, if you do a showing, are you going to have a larger, like, obviously a larger canvas than an 8x10 that's in a book? Maybe not. That's got to be hard to translate that over to a larger canvas because of the process.
Yeah, it depends.
Maybe I'm talking through my ass. I have no clue. So.
No, it depends. Each photo takes a long time.
I'm sure it does.
And if we're talking about 80 photos, you know, we're talking about maybe 5 years.
Yeah,
just to do 80 photos.
You couldn't capture, I suppose, that, translating it over to a larger canvas. You couldn't capture the feel of the original photo.
Not in another process.
Right. Yeah, right. Because of the...
You can't do it digitally.
You would have to do it digitally.
But you certainly could still create very engaging...
Oh, absolutely.
Exhibition, with the size. And, of course, my mind just goes through all the cultural programming that would go with it.
If you have a show of that book, or several of those books, because you would have more than probably five people that would go look at it, there would be, lines of people standing there thumbing through that. I mean, mesmerized by some of these pictures. Steve, some of these pictures are so phenomenal.
Thank you.
They just bore through you. They truly do.
But one of the things that Steve brought up was when you're doing an image and the actor himself is perhaps referring mentally to his own role. I think one of the ones that immediately comes to me is Bruce Davison, who essentially is now this character that he was in Lizanna's Raid.
Right? Yes.
Only now he's older. He's not the shaved tail anymore. And you just see this great transformation, and people immediately recognize that because, of course, it was a signature role in a wonderful
It was a great movie, and he was a wonder. He was good in it.
Oh, he's fantastic in it.
Yeah.
But that's, so things like that, these wonderful moments. When we did Bob Forster, wasn't he wearing Gregory Peck's boots?
Yes.
Yes. And, of course, Gregory Peck, the stalking moon was chasing him.
But I would say even as I might look at Edward Curtis pieces and not necessarily recognize some of the Native American images, some of those people, not knowing my history there real well, I can be absolutely compelled by the image. And I would imagine that there will be people that will look at these images now who maybe haven't really got the background of Western filmmaking that we all might be familiar with, mm-hmm. who will be as equally compelled and not look at the name. And, I know Johnny Crawford, I think music, even though I know he,
his orchestra,
a lot of
sure.
these names, I hate to say that I don't necessarily know, but I can't stop looking at the image.
Well, of course,
anyway.
that's kind of what I'm hoping to supply, so that when someone turns the page, suddenly they see, oh my gosh, that's so-and-so who did this movie and that movie. And
exactly.
There's a
or
quote
you may want to go
about, mm-hmm. About their own work and their own feelings about it.
Because we look at images from the 19th century and we're 100 and some years away from it, I think people will look at these images 100 years from now and find that connection. Even though they may not know the body of work.
Well, 100 years from now, it's going to be the really old West.
Yes.
You know, because we're going to be really old and dead. So.
Well, I don't know about you, but.
Well, you just had a birthday. So.
I did. I changed decades.
Yes,
I know.
You did.
But that's, I think, part of what speaks to me about these images. And you also provide, you have a great Facebook page for this book.
Yes.
Wonderful Facebook page. I spent quite a bit of time there last night. And you do show color photos.
Yes.
And they're wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
But
they're not. They're not it.
But it's really great to have them because it also sort of shows us if you're a millennial or someone that's been growing up in sort of the digital age and you're used to looking at Instagram and great, color photos, you can so clearly see these are great, but this is an entirely different feeling. Totally different
when
feeling.
When I was in college, Richard Brooks came down, and they did a whole thing about In Cold Blood. And Scott Wilson was there and everything. And Scott Wilson brought 16mm home movies that had been taken on the set.
Oh, really?
And we're so used to that movie. I mean, that astonishing Conrad Hall black and white photography.
Oh, absolutely phenomenal movie.
And it was just too strange to see suddenly everybody in color walking around. And it just gives you an entirely, it's like the threat was gone. Of course, you knew they were only actors, but it was a different thing.
Let me add something since you brought that up. Mm-hmm. Let me give some credit to some people that are part of my crew that take these production pictures that go on Facebook and Instagram.
Okay.
Poppy Ruiz, who is here.
Yay.
And she's capturing tonight.
She is, actually. She's shooting pictures like crazy.
Bobby Zinner. and Tammy Orloff.
Okay.
These are people that take production pictures. These are the color pictures. Some will go into the book.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason why they take these pictures and the reason why these pictures are important is because they show how the picture was taken.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the difference mm-hmm. of the way in which my picture mm-hmm. or the picture taken by my camera, you know, sees the subject and the way their camera sees mm-hmm. the subject. Their camera is digital and excellently capturing mm-hmm. the subject, but not the same thing.
They're just two different worlds.
No,
but it's the process. That's
and the process.
Thing.
I'm just gonna ask about the process.
We're also about process.
I'm sitting here and I'm my brain is looking at one of your sepia pictures, and I'm looking at this thing, and I couldn't give you a particular person I'm looking at, but I'm looking at the picture in general, and I'm looking at this, and I know in my brain there is no grain in there.
Right,
but you see the grain in there because the picture appears so old.
All right, there's no grain.
Right.
The reason why there's no grain is because it's a T-Max film, mm-hmm. which is a T-grain, which was developed by the Hubble telescope, originally,
mm-hmm.
and made by Kodak. So there's no grain to begin with. It's 100 ASA. I pull it to minus 25 ASA for the photography nuts out there.
My wife being one of them.
Okay. Well, maybe she would understand that, but because of the reciprocity, maybe she won't. But in any case, it's not sepia. These are tones that are different chemicals. A lot of it's selenium,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of it's gold chloride for, again, the photography people. It's archival, that lasts 150 or more years. It's not silver oxide. It's no longer silver. It's silver salts, just like what's in the cave drawings, which have lasted for thousands of years.
Sure.
Unfortunately, it's paper fiber behind the photograph, and that's what will disintegrate after 150 or 200 years. But the actual silver salts will last forever.
It's astounding.
It totally, thoroughly is astounding.
Now, we know that, you know, you're obviously a creative force here. On this show called The Writer's Block, we typically love to ask a question. Do you ever experience writer's block? In your case, maybe it's a creative...
Pictures block.
A creative block. Do you ever experience it? And if so, how do you maneuver around it, through it, over it?
I'm not too sure I understand what a block is.
There you go.
I have a block head, but what's a block?
Well, there's two of us in this room, so.
Well, it's we think of it as that thing, that obstacle that stops the creative process
it's when you step away from your camera and you go, damn it.
No.
It just isn't there.
There's two things that happen when you do photography. One is you have a visual concept, which is something that I think is different than writing, because writing, you have a different concept.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
It's more structural, whereas visual is almost as if it's a dream. It's something that pops into your head and stays with you.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you see it and it's not there, but it is there. And it stays with you, so it's not a block.
Mm-hmm.
It's a notion, a dream. It's a thought,
mm-hmm.
and it's something in your brain. So no, I never have a block. The other thing is that visual concepts are something that is like a seed. You put it in your head, and it grows. It grows in so many different ways and so many different avenues and so many, I guess there are tangents to everything that happens. Because once I have an idea that I'm going to make a certain set, say a bordello, and I'm going to put a piano in the bordello, everything else falls into place. And there's no such thing as having a thought or a visual concept that is empty. It all fills in. Mm-hmm. There are artifacts that fill it all in, and it just takes the actor to sit in the set to complete it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When we have to move along because we're going to run running out of time.
I know.
When do you think that you're going to finally get this book out where poor folk like me can buy one?
Middle of next year.
Okay, so 2017.
And he's going to keep us posted on.
I certainly hope so. I actually
invite you to a show.
We would love to come.
We would love to come.
We would love to come.
Put us down.
And I was going to bring you a coffee mug and you a coffee mug, and I totally spaced on them, so I have to mail them to you.
Okay. Oh my gosh.
Well, you can bring them.
Yeah, or bring them. Yeah.
Well, but they're cool. I mean, you know.
Writer's Block coffee mugs?
Yeah.
We have Writer's Block coffee mugs.
Wow, you have gone uptown. Hey,
yeah.
My gosh.
Yeah.
You had a forget the coffee mug block.
It was a...
I did. I had a forget the coffee mug block. Thanks, Steve. Appreciate that. okay, what do you got going on next? Make it quick, Court. I know that's tough for you.
Yeah, no, doing the next two
Shotguns.
And working with... Mr. Steve Carver, and then...
guys are phenomenal.
Onward and upward.
Guys are absolutely phenomenal.
So how can people follow you, Court? How do they find you?
I still have my little old chugging along, ccourtneyjoiner.com.
Website.
Which desperately needs to be updated. I think my high school graduation picture is the last thing that was up there.
Well, Bleeding Ground is on there.
Oh, good.
And so, yeah.
Good. I can't remember.
And I think Nemo's on there.
If I did that.
Yes, it is, because I was there today. Steve, how can we find you?
My website is Image Studios Lab. No, Image Studios. Lab and... Darkroom.
Wow. .com.
.com.
And okay.
And then
your Facebook page?
And the Facebook page for the book.
Yeah, I also have the...
really wonderful.
The book.
Yes. And it's just the title.
Unsung Heroes and Villains of the Silver Screen.
Yeah. Thank you.
And it's a great page. And you can go back and you can. I went all the way back to 2014 and found a wonderful podcast radio or interview with you, where it really was all about directing part of your career, but it was fabulous. So,
can I throw something in real?
You raised your hand.
Of course,
I completely forgot. I did a booklet that will be available with the new Blu-ray release of Night of the Grizzly coming from Paramount. So
Night of the Grizzly
thing on that, and the commentaries that just came out on Count Yorga Vampire, Return of Count Yorga, and we're doing Runaway Train next week, and then Rawhide, Culpeper Cattle Company, and Stagecoach.
Count Yorga scared the shit out of me.
And
you and Henry are busy doing the commentaries on a lot of these books.
Yes, in fact, we did Stagecoach, Alex Court.
And Court will be back with the Writer's Block on the 22nd of this month.
Yes, I will.
With Russ Avison, and our guest that night will be Casey Teffertiller, who wrote the definitive Wyatt Earp. So
Wyatt Earp.
Yep, and I'm going to be recuperating from my hip replacement, and Steve tells me that I'm going to feel like a new man.
Fit as a fiddle and ready for love.
There you go. I mean, back on my motorcycle.
Yep.
Vroom. Okay. Thank you all for listening. Thank you so much for joining us tonight on the Writer's Block. It's been great, and you two have been phenomenal.
Thank you
so much for joining us.
Thank you.
I hope we didn't cut you off too much, Steve, but, I mean, God, there's so much to learn about your stuff. Please look at his website. And look at his Facebook page, and then check out Courtney, too. He's got a lot of good stuff. And with that being said, good night. Have a good week. And we'll be back with you next week here on the Writer's Block.